Welcome to the 252nd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are an overview of Patrick's weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and our preview of the 2024 NCAA basketball tournament. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com, starting in college basketball, where Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 1-3 with his NBA predictions, so that makes him 4-4 for the past week and brings him to an overall total of 1,019 against 658 losses. That's an overall 60.8 winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought I actually had a pretty good week, even though maybe the results, you know, they're just average. But college basketball predictions definitely went well, obviously. Went 3-1 in those, all those being... Actually, not all in the same round, but all of them Friday conference tournament games. And then in the NBA, I kind of had some unfortunate circumstances. I guess technically it's not unfortunate that I picked the Suns to beat the Bucks, knowing that Giannis wouldn't play. I mean, that's really just the Suns' fault for losing that game, which I guess I'll go into some of my individual ones in the NBA first. But, you know, the Mavericks beat the Nuggets 104-102. Kyrie Irving literally hit a left-handed runner at the end of this game as the shot clock as the clock expired to win it. So I mean, I don't know what to do about that one. That game probably should have gone overtime, but Kyrie with the lefty floater from the free throw line to save it for the Nuggets. So or to save it for the Mavericks. So not really too upset about that loss. And at the same time, you know, with the Suns thing, I mean, I wasn't gonna pick the Suns to lose to the Bucks, knowing that the Bucks didn't have Giannis. That would just be a bad pick. Normally I get mad because injuries get announced after the fact, after I picked a team, then they lose because they don't have their best player. But this was the opposite. This was knowing who was injured, and I picked a team that was healthier, and then the healthy team lost anyway. So that's more on the Suns. We'll talk about that later. And in the Warriors game, I picked the Lakers to beat the Warriors. They seem to play a little bit better when they play each other. Steph was potentially going to be out in this game, but he ended up playing, and then AD got injured in the middle of this game, so that was kind of the flip result of some bad injury luck. And then the Knicks beat the Kings. That is the one prediction I got right this week. But then I'll go back to college basketball. Auburn beat South Carolina for the second time this year by more than 30 points. Houston beat Texas Tech by 23. Not a very close game. A&M beat Kentucky, which was a big upset. And, you know, a lot of people thought was the win that they needed to propel them potentially into the tournament. And then, as we learned from the shaky committee this year, that actually they were probably secure before that win, even though they definitely shouldn't have been. And frankly, maybe didn't deserve to be secure even after that win, but we'll talk about that later. And then finally, San Diego State beat number 18 in the country, Utah State, but number like 45 in the committee's eyes, or 30 or something like that, Utah State, 86-70. So the one team that did get respect from the committee in that conference did get a win this week, and I predicted they were going to get that win, but then they lost to the 11 seed in the finals, who shouldn't be an 11 seed, but we'll get more on that topic later.
All right, well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted, as always, on our website on Thursday. Before we turn our attention back to Patrick ripping on the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, we'll turn our attention to the NBA with the most impressive teams of last week.
Yeah, there will be a lot of that. I will tell you one thing that the NBA gets right, which is that the record determines who's in the playoffs. And, you know, obviously there's a larger sample size and they play each other only, which is a big deal. But I would say, honestly, this year I would rather have had team record decide who was in the tournament based on some of the decisions that the committee came to, I'm not going to lie. But yes, I'm throwing a lot of shade at Michigan State and Mississippi State and Texas A&M, and I think that also still would have kept St. John's out, so I think I'd be happy with it.
Can we now turn our attention to the NBA with the most impressive teams?
We are turning our attention to the NBA, and speaking of records, the Magic had a winning record, they're about to have a winning record, for the first time since 2018-19 season. They beat Brooklyn and Toronto twice this week, 3-0 overall. It was an easy schedule for sure, but look, they took advantage of it, and like I said, they are only two wins away now from their first winning record since 2018-19 when they finished just 42-40, and they're already at 40 wins. So pretty obviously, I mean, they'd have to go worse than 3-11 to finish the season out to actually be worse than that record. So going to be their best record since at least 2018-19, and before that, their last winning season was in the 2011-2012 season. So looking at that, a historic season, not historic necessarily for the Magic, but one of the better seasons in recent franchise history for sure. And then you have the Rockets. Look, they went 3-0 this week. They're going to finish under 500. Likely they're still three games under, but they beat San Antonio, Washington, and Cleveland, and they're making steady progress as a team. And once again, I like how they look going into next year. I really didn't believe in the free agent signings originally that they made, but I'm surprised that this team has been semi-competitive in the West, and I think they'll probably continue that going into next year, get a little bit better with some of the young core getting better as well. Of course, they're not like the Magic. They have had plenty of success recently, obviously, in the James Harden era, so definitely not one of the better seasons for them. But then you have the Knicks. You know, this team, they have not had a lot of success recently, although the Jalen Brunson era has been fruitful in its short form so far. And this week was a fruitful week for the Knicks. They beat Sacramento, they beat Portland, and they beat Philly. We talked about some of their embarrassing results from them last week. They only scored 73 points in a loss against Philly. But this week was just what the doctor ordered. They avenged that loss against Philly by blowing them out and actually holding Philly to 79 points again. But this time around, it was enough to win the game. Then they comfortably beat Portland and Sacramento. Didn't give up more than 93 points at any point this week, which is really good for them. OG Anunoby came back, and that was all they needed to get more consistent production on offense. Josh Hart has been an Iron Man all season long, just playing ridiculous amounts of minutes. I think he's the first, I think I saw some stat that he had played 40 minutes in a game for 8 or 9 games in a row or something like that, and that was the first time that had been done in like 8 years or something like that. So Tibbs just keeps chucking Josh Hart out there, and he just keeps playing. Unfortunately for him, his team, and really the team that pretty much every Knicks player came from, won't be in the tournament. Villanova, not there. Although they are a 1 seed, just in the NIT. But I'll move on from the Knicks and from Villanova talk and go to the Celtics, and Villanova won't be mentioned for the rest of this podcast. But they went 3-0 this week. They beat Washington, Phoenix, and Utah. Look, the Celtics do this every week, so it isn't that surprising. But I'm going to give them their credit once again. It's a good week for them to take care of business, and they're getting closer to locking up home court. They are 10 games ahead of second place in the East with only 14 games to go, so probably will lock up home court in the Eastern Conference playoffs later this week, and in the overall playoffs probably sometime next week.
Okay, let's go to the flip side of the coin, the least impressive teams of last week.
Well, the opposite of the Boston Celtics are the Los Angeles Lakers. Their rivals, their opposite coast mates, 0-2 this week for the Lakers as well, so opposite in the record category. The Lakers, more specifically Anthony Davis, have a DeMontis Sabonis problem, and it is a big problem, both literally and physically, and figuratively, I guess. Sabonis is 10-0 in his career against AD, and the Kings swept the season series with the Lakers, which, you know, oftentimes it doesn't really mean anything, but when you look at the standings and you see that these two teams are fighting for the same positions, the Lakers at 10th in the West and the Kings at 6th in the West, the Kings are 38-28, the Lakers are 36-32. They're separated by 3 games in the standings. The Lakers lost all 4 games against the Kings, like I said. That is not good. I mean, you just can't do that when you're fighting with a team for seeding. And then also playing the Warriors, who are now tied with them for the 9th spot, also can't afford to lose those types of games either. The Rockets aren't going to catch up to the Lakers or anything like that. I don't think I'm worried about that from the Lakers' perspective. But you really don't want to be the 10 seed where you're playing a 1-game elimination game at the Golden State Warriors. And if you lose, you're already out of the entire playoffs. And then even if you win, you still have to go on the road and beat somebody else. The loser of a game that currently would be Dallas versus Phoenix, which would not be a very good 1-game scenario to be in either. I wouldn't want to be playing Luka or KD in a 1-game scenario where I'm on the road for a playoff spot after I had just beaten Steph Curry. So these are the type of games the Lakers need to win, and they're the type of games that recently they just haven't been winning. So pretty bad week for the Lakers. And also AD got poked in the eye and has another injury, which we'll see how long that holds him out for. Might not be that long, but still just not a good sign for them. Then you have the Nets, who went 0-3 this week. They lost to San Antonio, they lost to Indy, and they lost to Orlando. Not a particularly hard schedule for them, but they still could not stop the downward spiral out of the playoff picture. Somehow they're still the 11 seed in the East, but the 4.5-game gap between them and the Hawks is going to be pretty hard to make up with only 14 games left in the season. Then you have the Clippers, who are third on this list. They went 1-3. They only beat Chicago this week. They lost to Minnesota, New Orleans, and Atlanta. They, at some point, were playing so well that I thought it might be inevitable that they were going to take over the one seed in the West. They were just, I mean, they were like one or one and a half, maybe two games back, and they had been playing really well since that poor, like, 8-16 start or whatever it was to the season. But since then, I mean, they've kind of leveled off again. They're now only, you know, they are 3.5 games clear of the three teams tied for 6th through 8th, which those teams are Sacramento, Dallas, and Phoenix. But at the same time, they're closer to that group than they are to the top three, which is Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Denver, who are all only separated by 0.5 game from each other. So they're kind of, I don't want to say they're locked into that 4 spot, but they're pretty close to it. And the Pelicans are only 1 game back of them for that 4 spot. So, I mean, I guess they could fall to 5th, but it doesn't look like there's enough time in the season for them to drop to the play-in, but there's also not enough time for them to catch up to the top three. So going to be a tough assignment for them in the second round, depending on that matchup, but they're definitely not going to have home court in that second round. So pretty important to think about there. And then you have the Phoenix Suns, who are in that 6th to 8th group. They might be falling behind the Kings pretty soon, but they are 1-2, or they went 1-2 this week. They beat Charlotte. They lost to Boston and Milwaukee. Like I said on the prediction segment, they had an opportunity to get a win against a great team, and they completely squandered it against the Bucks. The Bucks didn't have Giannis healthy in that game, and they still got the victory. Obviously, if you're going to be a top-tier playoff team, especially in the West where everything's just so crowded, you need to beat other playoff teams. And the Suns just have shown an inability to do that all year long, frankly. And while various teams in the West kind of surge every other week, they just haven't looked like one of those contenders who can keep their head above the rest of the pack like the Timberwolves, the Thunder, and the Nuggets have throughout the season. And really, the Clippers for until pretty much this week, this recent stretch. So the Suns need to start playing better. Shouldn't be a play-in team with all the talent they have and really all the resources they put into making this team special. But here we are at the end of the season with them still sitting at 8th place. Not a good sign for Phoenix.
Okay, that wraps up our look at the NBA for this week. Let's turn our attention to college basketball with our in-depth preview of the NCAA tournament. And I will start with a question that I don't think there's any mystery on what Patrick's thoughts are. Patrick, did the committee get it right this year?
No. Look, they didn't use the eye test. They didn't use quality wins. They didn't use really anything. They just kind of, I don't know how to explain this, but it just feels like they just kind of, I think they kind of honestly got lazy. I'm just gonna say it. I don't like to do that with calling people out like that. But look, you hear. Look, let me start by giving credit to some people before I start bashing people. Everybody who interviewed any member of the committee, especially the committee chair yesterday, did a great job. They asked great questions. They asked very fair questions, and they asked questions in a manner where, if you had a consistent methodology, you would have a very easy answer to answer said questions. But they didn't, because they didn't have a good methodology. For example, there is a clip that has gone around plenty of times today where, you know, a lot of people thought Michigan State should have been on the bubble. I'm not picking on Michigan State because, well, let me put it this way. I'm not picking on Michigan State because I don't like Michigan State, even though that might be true. But I'm picking on them because that is, they are a big name brand team. The committee gets a lot of complaints of how they treat name brand teams all the time. But this year, especially with this team, they got a bunch of questions because a lot of people thought this team should have been on the bubble the entire year. A lot of people, when they were in the midst of their losing streak and lost 4 or 5 to end the season, were saying, how is anybody still saying this team is even in the tournament, let alone safely in and off the bubble? And yet, even with 5 bid stealers, Michigan State wasn't even in the last 4 in, and let alone the last 4 in. They were, I think, above the last 4 buys, depending on how that overall seed list shook out, which I'm not going to lie, I never actually fully digested, especially in that spot. But look, the one problem that I have is just if you're going to get things, I don't think that there's an objectively right way to do the bracket or a wrong way to do the bracket. But if you're going to follow a methodology, you better stick to it. And I've talked about this like 1,000 times on past podcasts. And, you know, I can poke little individual examples every year. But this year has never been more clear that they didn't have a clear methodology. Because for Michigan State, it was good enough to pile up 4 quad 2 losses and also 9 quad 1 losses and only have 3 quad 1 wins all year long. And that was good enough to make the tournament. But for a team like Oklahoma, more wins in a better conference with only quad one losses and more quad one wins wasn't enough to even make the tournament. Now, I'm okay with Oklahoma missing the tournament, frankly. They were my last team in. But I do have to mention that the explanation for why a team like Michigan State was included in the field, when asked, the committee chair said Michigan State had good wins. That is objectively false. They did not have good wins. They barely beat anybody all year long. They had plenty of opportunities to take on tournament teams in the Big Ten. They played Purdue 3 times. They beat them 0 times. They beat Illinois once. Congratulations. That was their best win of the year. Their second best win of the year in the conference was beating Northwestern by 4 after Northwestern was missing 3 starters in that game. Or 2 starters and 1 starter with an ankle brace. Fine, I guess. But look, this has now turned into a little bit of a too long Michigan State rant, but I want to pick on them as a case study because it's just an overall show of just how off the committee was this year. And I talked about it on my own personal Twitter account. The amount of inconsistencies from bracket matrix to the committee has never been this large. And I think they also did it specifically in relation to one conference, that being the Mountain West. I mean, the differential between where the committee had some of these teams and where the Mountain West actually should have been is just huge. I tweeted this. The matrix averages versus the actual seeds. Only San Diego State had a worse matrix average than their actual seed. And even that number was that they were on average a 5.33 and they got a 5 seed. So they should have been a 5 seed and they were a 5 seed. The rest of the conference, Utah State and Nevada both had numbers in between 6 and 7. Utah State got an 8, Nevada got a 10. Boise State was 7.82, they got a 10 also. Colorado State was an 8.78 average, they got a 10 seed. And then New Mexico got a 9.4 average and they were an 11 seed. So that just tells you entirely on that conference, they got it wrong. And the reason why I say they got it wrong is just because if you actually look at some of the metrics they use, for example, the net, which is their main metric, which has, you know, a team like Michigan State at 24 and is really the only platform that actually likes Michigan State other than KenPom, New Mexico's net was higher than Michigan State's, yet they got an 11 seed. So, you know, just make it make sense is all people ask for. And I just don't think this year they made it make sense at all. And I think that's best evidenced by the fact also that my score on a personal note from last year, my payment score on Bracket Matrix, which thank you to the Bracket Project for letting me be in the Bracket Matrix and also for doing all that math, because that'd be really hard to score myself and I don't do any of that. But my score from last year was 368. Last year that was good enough for 46th out of 226 people. This year that score is 13 points better than the number one overall bracket. This year, my score of 342 was good enough for 86th, which is in line with the matrix and in the 62nd percentile, whereas that score would have been the average score in 2019, would have been below average in 2021, 2022, and would have been below average by 14 points last year. So just going to say this is the first year that the bracket matrix average bracket will go down in average accuracy. And it's going down to the level that it was at in 2018, which is, at least by eyeballing it, which is just, that just shouldn't happen. I mean, it's just not, the committee just did not do a good job of doing, of seeding teams this year. And I think one more example that I will give for that is Duquesne. I mean, this team is not an 11 seed by any stretch of the imagination. All of the 12 seeds, I've also posted this on Twitter, all of the 12 seeds have better metrics across the board than that team by far. A better overall record, more quad one wins, whatever you want to go with. The only thing that Duquesne has on any of those teams is that they have 2 wins in quad one because they played 5 games. The other teams didn't get opportunities. But the fact of the matter is, Grand Canyon beat San Diego State. James Madison beat Michigan State on the road. McNeese State beat VCU, who is Duquesne's best win of the year because they beat them in the conference championship game. There is no justification for Duquesne being there other than the fact that either they were lazy and just left VCU's spot to Duquesne, or they intentionally put Duquesne on the 11 line because they wanted to give BYU the matchup of a true 12 seed because BYU moved down a seed line to not play on Sunday. Which, by the way, one more thing about that. why in the world does BYU have to move down a seed line to not play on Sunday? Can't you just put a 5-12 game on a Saturday and just leave it alone? I mean, I don't understand why they couldn't just play as a Thursday. Why do this is a 5-12? Why can't the 5-12 be a Thursday-Saturday region? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't think it's about this weekend. I think it's about the potential for next weekend, where there are other teams that it impacts. It impacts a whole slew of teams. This weekend it would have been a lot easier, but they have to pair them with the team in their region and that region that they're in. They could have moved the region, I guess, but...
And my whole thing with that is that BYU is not a protected seed, so they just needed to throw them in a region where they were with a protected seed that wouldn't be playing at that time. That's all they needed to do. So overall, I think the one word that I would use, and I don't like to do this and call people this, but the one word I'm using is lazy. I mean, that is the one word to wrap up how I think a lot of people felt about the committee's rankings. And in a second, we'll talk about what they have created because of those selections. But you want to give that intro?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I will say that even for somebody who's not in the bracket matrix or a bracketologist and doesn't do bracket predictions all year like me, unlike you, even I watch, and I probably watch the least amount of college basketball this year than I've ever watched in my life. When some of those seedings came up, even I said, what are they talking about? So let's call myself a informed but casual fan this year. Even I saw it. So no, the committee did not get it right. Let's talk about some things that were the result of them not getting it right. What's the most wide open region in your opinion?
All right, it's the West. It's by far. It is the worst region of all time. I have not gone back and looked at it, but I don't think I need to. I have never seen a clearer separation between the top 3-1 seeds and the final one seed. It's nothing against North Carolina, but it's been talked about all year. Houston, Purdue, and UConn had the resumes of one seeds, and the teams behind them, there were a lot of really, really, really good resumes, but there was not another one seed this year. Between North Carolina, Tennessee, Arizona, Iowa State, even down to Baylor or Creighton or Marquette, there just wasn't a fourth team that really, really stepped up into that void of the last one seed. And wouldn't you know that they also chose to put every single overseeded team in that region with the worst one seed? You have, like I said, you have North Carolina. Look, Arizona, a lot of metrics love them. They're actually, I would argue, by metrics, I think they are the best two seed. I don't think they're personally the best two seed, but...
Well, by some metrics, they're better than North Carolina.
Well, they are definitely better than North Carolina, in my opinion, and we'll talk about them more later. But look, St. Mary's is overseeded as a 5, and they got a 12 seed that has a pretty good chance of beating them, frankly. And frankly, they got an underseeded 12 seed, you could argue. Then you have New Mexico, who is better than the 6 seed they're playing, which just shouldn't happen, but it's true. I mean, if you actually look at the metrics across the board, I wanted to move Clemson, and I'll be fully transparent with this, I wanted to move Clemson down to an 8 or a 9 seed, but I knew for a fact that the committee just wouldn't do that. So I left them as the worst 7 seed because I thought, look, this team's an 8 seed, but they're going to get probably a 6, at worst a 7, and I didn't want to mess up my score, which it's about being accurate with the committee, not about what I think personally, obviously. My goal is to predict what the committee's picking, not what I would pick. Clemson sucks, I'm just going to say. That team limped into the tournament. They're still limping. They're going to be limping. And New Mexico is hot, won their conference, and also has been built for March from the beginning of the year. You can look back at some people's predictions at the beginning of the year that had New Mexico as a Final Four team. And even if you want to call those outlandish, they have the exact makeup of one of those teams that goes in March and goes on a crazy run like FAU did last year. And I totally think that all of this ranting about New Mexico is going to backfire because everybody's going to pick them and then they're going to lose and then everybody's going to look like an idiot. It's going to sound like Iowa from a few years ago. But I've never seen one of these teams actually be balanced either, and this team actually is balanced. So I do like that. They're balanced. They have great guard play. 3 guys that are all borderline NBA guards. And they're also playing a team that doesn't have anything. No NBA players. 11 losses on the season in a weak conference. Compared to, frankly, I think the Mountain West at least was on par with the ACC this year. And New Mexico not only won that conference, but also had 6 or 7 or 8 losses all year long, maybe 9. So I like New Mexico there. Nevada is also wildly underseeded, and they're playing an overseeded Dayton team, so that helps too. And then, look, Alabama's there. I think they're a good team, but look, Alabama is second in offensive efficiency, 112th in defensive efficiency. Really profiles similarly to that Keegan Murray Iowa team that I famously thought was going to get on a run and, you know, make the Final Four out of nowhere and then just collapsed early and lost in the first round to Richmond because they just couldn't play defense. Alabama could literally lose first round to Charleston. I think Grand Canyon could beat St. Mary's first round. I think Baylor is probably the worst three seed in terms of who's going to play well in the tournament. And I just think that overall, this is just a very, very weak region.
All right. Well, let's see who you think has the easiest path for a one seed. Now, is it the West? Because it's the easiest, most wide open region, worst region in history. Who do you got?
So my thought process with this is that the West is probably the worst region. But the thing is, I don't actually like, and it's the one matchup that I avoided. It's maybe the two teams I never talked about. I think North Carolina has two teams that could beat it in the second round. I think that Michigan State, when they play, I mean, look, this is a team that was ranked ahead of North Carolina at the start of the season. And then you have Mississippi State, who recently has actually started to play like a top team. They have beaten beaten Tennessee, who is at the caliber of North Carolina, same exact tier, twice this season. So they've shown the ability to beat teams like that all year long. I think Josh Harbert has the ability to go off as much as R.J. Davis can. So look, there for me, just because that second round matchup is actually kind of dangerous for them, and they have two experienced teams with good guards and really that can match up with what they have well, other than Michigan State on the big man end, because they're not going to do a good job with Baycott at all. I do think that I won't give them the easiest path, not only because that, but also I don't think they're good enough to handle any path. I don't think they're a Final Four quality team, period. So I can't give them say they have the easiest path because I just don't think they're ready to handle it. Now, a team that is ready to handle an easy path, that's Purdue. And I'm just going to say this. Gonzaga's the worst five seed. They're overseeded. Kansas is the biggest question mark I've ever seen in the tournament. They could very easily play, and if they're fully healthy, if Dickinson is healthy, if McCullough is healthy, they're better than North Carolina is. They're a one seed quality team. But if those guys are not healthy, they're one of the worst teams in the tournament. I mean, this team could lose first round if those guys aren't healthy. There's a reason why the line for the Duquesne-BYU game is the same as the line for the Kansas-Samford game. It's just, we don't know how healthy those guys are. And this is a Kansas team that, even when healthy, has had points. Cincinnati almost beat them at Allen, but at the same time, they were fully healthy, and they beat Houston at home by a pretty good amount. But then 2 weeks later, when they weren't healthy, BYU went into Allen Fieldhouse and beat them. So they are wildly inconsistent based on the injuries, which is why I'm saying that Purdue has the easiest path, because I really do think that the bottom of the bracket has a lot of the dangerous teams. I think Oregon is capable of making a run. They're built with guard play. They've gotten better as they've gotten healthier. I think Creighton's a good Final Four pick, frankly, for value if you're looking to pick against the grain. And I think that Tennessee has a lot of weapons and could be a Final Four team as well, although they're not my personal cup of tea, and I've never been, anybody who knows me knows that I never pick Tennessee to go far in anything because I think they're always overseeded and they never do anything. But look, fact of the matter is, all those teams are going to take each other out. Even South Carolina, who's down there, who has terrible metrics but has hung with top teams all year long and found ways to win, only one of them can play Purdue because those teams are all in the bottom of the bracket. So that's not going to be a concern. All they have to do is beat a banged up Kansas team or beat a Gonzaga team that's literally been one guard down the entire year and isn't prepared to compete in March. And as long as they can get past Great Osabor in the second round, which really tough matchup for most teams, not a tough matchup for Zach Edey, they just need to really just get past the first weekend and not choke and get those demons out of their head. And I really don't see anything stopping them from getting the Final Four.
Well, you talked about the West being one of the worst regions ever. So my pick for this was the West, the easiest path for a one seed. But I don't understand why UNC, the lowest one seed, is in such an easy region. So it makes no sense to me. It's the easiest path for a one seed, and a one seed that doesn't deserve it.
And it's also ironic because it's not even like it's because they put teams from the West who are in this region. It's not West Coast teams at all. It's Alabama's not from the West. Baylor, I mean, I guess Baylor could be the only argument, but
Arizona, the number two, but it's insane. They're, and I'll go by KenPom, and like we talked about some of the metrics, the number two seed is a higher ranked team than them. So I guess, does that make it a harder path because they actually have a two seed that's ranked higher than them? Maybe. I just don't get it. It's just, it makes no sense. And it makes no sense that that region, the lowest, it makes no sense, and we'll probably talk about this, so we'll lead into the path for the hardest path for a one seed. It makes no sense that the lowest rated one seed has the easiest region, and then you've got another region that's got theoretically the number one overall seed, and they have two teams seeded, ranked higher in KenPom than the number two seed in the West. So I'm garbling this all up. Let's go to what you think the hardest region is. I just tried to foreshadow it without revealing it, so let's have you talk about it. The hardest path for a one seed.
So it's UConn's region, and the reason why, and I can tell everybody the reason why, is once again, the committee was lazy. And the reason why that happened is because UConn, on an actual regional score basis, doesn't have a hard region, but that's only because the committee left Iowa State as the worst two seed. So UConn theoretically got the worst two seed by seed line. Iowa State was the best two seed by resume.
Yeah.
And they were the best two seed.
I mean, I thought they'd be one
pretty
seed.
Obviously. They were the only team on Bracket Matrix to get a one seed outside of the actual one seeds.
Makes no sense.
But the committee left them at eighth overall, which meant that which meant that UConn also had to get tougher three or four seeds to account for the fact that their overall regional score to balance out the protected seeds had to be better. And the funny thing is, they also underseeded Auburn, who most people thought would be a three seed, and the committee had as the third best four seed. So they gave them both of the teams that they were too lazy to move at the end of the weekend, and then also gave them a pretty dangerous Illinois team. And this region's just ridiculous, not to mention the fact that those are the top four seeds. Guess what? Their pod has an eight seed that made the Final Four last year, and a five seed that made the Final Four last year. The only other Final Four team that made the tournament is UConn. The other Final Four team missed the tournament. All three Final Four teams from last year that are in the tournament are in one region, in one pod, and will be out before the Elite Eight. Let alone the fact that even, you know, I'm gonna throw some love that way because I go to that school. Northwestern beat Purdue this year. I mean, they're the only nine seed that actually has a really good win the entire year. TCU didn't have one of those. TCU beat Houston, so I'll give them that credit. But, I mean, Northwestern's a shell of itself, honestly. They are injured. We all know this. Well, maybe not everybody knows this, but I definitely know it. They're very, very injured, very banged up. Not the same team that beat Purdue at all. Probably not going to be capable of beating UConn or even FAU. But the fact of the matter is, they also, I don't know how they managed to do it, but they managed to make overseeding FAU, and I didn't even talk about how bad that seeding decision was, because that decision is terrible where FAU is. That team should be nowhere near the eight line. But I think it's pretty ironic that last year they underseeded FAU, and it screwed over the one seed in that region, and this year they overseeded FAU, and it's still screwing over the one seed because they're still giving UConn a ridiculously tough path. I barely even mentioned Iowa State, who really is the hottest team in the country. Honestly,
they've got three of the hottest teams in the country in there. Four conference champions.
Including themselves. Yeah.
They've got the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, and UConn. Three conference tournament champions.
I mean, they have the conference champions of all the best conferences they do have the best conference champions.
Yes.
Yep, they do. Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
And
also, by the way, we talked about it. BYU had to move down a seed line, so they also got a six seed that should be a five seed.
Yeah, it's insane.
Not to mention that part.
Four of the top 10 teams in KenPom in one region. It's like they don't want to repeat. It makes absolutely no sense.
Also, while they threw together that West region, it's a little insane to do that at the same time.
It makes no sense whatsoever. UConn should just be up in arms.
Well, the good news is Danny Hurley is going to use that as motivation, and they're probably going to steamroll through them all anyway, but look, I mean, I put it in here, I never even said it. It's a gauntlet of a region, and I'm not sure how they drew up that for the champions. It's just
a gauntlet of a region, and I still think you and I both think that they're going to get through it. We'll get to that in a bit. Let's get to everybody's favorite topics for picking brackets. Double-digit upsets, which, given the state of affairs below the top three teams in the nation, I think you probably have a long list.
Well, I'll make quick explanations, but look, I think Oregon, Drake, NC State, Grand Canyon are kind of first round wonders for me. I don't think if you're looking for a team, I don't buy into the Oregon as a Sweet 16 team hype. Maybe it's just because I believe in Creighton too much. But I think Creighton is a team that could easily challenge for the title this year. This is not a team that you should be picking to lose in the round of 32. It's just a dumb pick. So I get Oregon as a one seed, as a one round thing. I think same thing with NC State because I don't think Texas Tech is that good. I think they have some clear flaws in that team. I think Drake because I don't think Washington State is good. And I think Grand Canyon because I don't think St. Mary's is that good, frankly. And I really, really like what Grand Canyon has on their roster. Some very, very tough matchups. And frankly, if there was one team that was completely ill-equipped out of all the five seeds to deal with a player like Tyon Grant Foster, it's 100% St. Mary's. It's a really bad matchup for that team. And then I think that Nevada, I think that Colorado, and I think that New Mexico are all legitimate contenders to make Sweet 16 runs as double-digit seeds. And I'm not just saying that just to say that. I think they actually can make those runs. I'm predicting New Mexico to make that run. And I should mention, Colorado has a lottery pick, a player averaging 18 points per game, and a fourth-year senior who's averaged 15 points a game 3 years in a row. That team is not a bad team at all. And it's crazy because they have to play in the first four. But not only that, they have to play Florida after that, who is a pretty trendy upset pick. And then they do have to play Marquette. But, I mean, look, if Tyler Kolek isn't 100% by the first weekend, which we just don't know, either Colorado or Florida could be definitely taking that upset. Florida's not a double digit, so they don't count in this category. But Colorado, actually, in terms of top-level talent, might have the best big three in the entire tournament, which is crazy to say, but it's actually true if you look at some of the draft projections of where DeSilva, KJ Simpson, and Cody Williams are all going. That's a really, really talented, top-level talent on a team. And they probably, frankly, shouldn't have been a 10 seed.
All right, well, I'm going to give you my biggest lock of the tournament, and that's who will not be a double-digit upset, and that's not Duquesne. I think we all agree on that. Little tidbit here, just to throw in why we're always talking about these double-digit upsets. Since 1985, when the tournament went to 64 teams, now 68 with the first four in, 10 seeds have won 59 times. That's 39% of the games. 11 seeds have won one less game 58 times, and 12s 53 times. And I know that everybody's always talking about that 12-5 upset, but it happens a little less frequently, obviously, than the 11s.
It also happens a lot less frequently than people think. There's a little bit of a paradigm problem with that.
And I think, and so last year there was no 12 over a 5. I think the 5s, when you got the 5 seed, people are now not taking the 12s lightly. But I think you'll see a few of those this year. And since in that vein, I'll name the other ones that you didn't name. James Madison, who beat Michigan State earlier in the year, right? McNeese State.
Also only lost three games and two of them were to App State. There's only one team that could actually beat them all year long. And you should mention that you probably don't even know this, but App State beat Auburn earlier this year. It's not even like App State's a bad team.
So I think look out for McNeese State. And if McNeese State pulls that off, and if Kansas is potentially deeply depleted, as you said, we don't know, you could see McNeese State getting to that Sweet 16.
You could see that region being a... I haven't said this publicly, but I will say, if there's a region that's going to end up a 12 versus a 13 seed, that really is a lot more likely than it normally is in that region.
Sanford's going to beat Kansas?
You just said that Kansas has the injury concerns. If you're telling me that one of Dickinson or McCullough is out, I 100% think Sanford could beat that Kansas team. Kansas has just looked so awful at the end of the year. And that's the thing. If both of them are out, I would honestly just pick Sanford straight up. I don't think that Kansas team is good enough to beat anybody in the tournament other than maybe a 15 or a 16 seed if both of them are out.
What about Duquesne? Could they beat an 11?
Kansas could probably beat Duquesne, but maybe other than Duquesne in the 15 and the 16s, they couldn't beat anybody.
Well, let's talk about some other surprise teams to look out for. Maybe not double-digit seeds, but some other surprise teams.
So Boise State, unfortunately, is playing in the first four. They might not even make it, but... yeah, that's ridiculous. But look, if they do make it, I think they're a pretty good team. I think they're also unfortunate. So I will say this. Unfortunately, Boise State, Colorado, and Florida are all on my surprise teams list, not only because they play a Marquette team that might be a little bit banged up in the second round, but also they're just really great teams. The committee just somehow threw all of them together. It feels exactly like the Memphis FAU 8-9 pairing last year that went sideways, where FAU ended up with the Final Four run off of that pairing, even though Memphis was a call or two away from beating FAU and stopping that run before it even started.
So it really feels like that region could be one of those regions. And then I'll also say, no one is talking about Purdue. I mean, everybody's talking about Purdue choking because everybody just thinks that Purdue chokes every single year, even though that's not true. But if there was ever a team that actually, like, on a matchup basis could take down one of the one seed that's in their region, I actually don't dislike Utah State's chances. I said that Edie could handle Osabor, but Osabor is probably one of the tougher matchups for Edie in the entire tournament, and maybe the only guy who can actually go up against him, stand his ground, not pick up four or five fouls early, and actually keep going and scoring on the offensive end. So I'll put Utah State in that group. And then also BYU, because they're just in a region of a bunch of teams who choke in the tournament. I mean, you know, we talked about that tough region that they're in, but Illinois hasn't made the Sweet 16 since 2005, and that would be their matchup to get to the Sweet 16. So why not have them take that upset over Illinois? They're also an underseeded team like we talked about. They are a 5 seed. It shouldn't be that hard for them to handle a team that is a 3 seed. And the fact of the matter is they've played good teams all year long. BYU, if they get hot for a weekend, that team, I mean, they might be very, very bipolar because they could go from making 23s in a game to just going completely cold and just flaming out and losing to anybody. But if they are on, they could beat really, really anybody. And I like that shooting profile. It's a dangerous team to go up against. If you catch them on the wrong weekend, there's not a team in the country that can beat BYU when they're going right.
Well, I think you must have read my notes. So I did say other surprise teams to look out for. One, your lock, not Duquesne. But I said the surprise teams to look out for was Florida, who's 29 in the KenPom, looking good in the NCAA tournament, but there's injury questions. But the committee didn't do them any favors, as they have to play the winner of Boise State, we've just mentioned, and Colorado, that first four game, who are in a play-in game, despite Colorado being 26 in the KenPom, Boise State being 39. So what's up with that? I don't understand that. Again, the committee putting those teams in a play-in. So I think the winner of Boise State, Colorado, as you mentioned, could be in the Sweet 16. We've seen winners of these first four playing games ride momentum and you know, at least winning a game in the regular field and a couple Sweet 16 appearances and a couple Final Fours.
Yeah, look, the one thing that I also have to say about Florida is that I'm not even saying this off of the SEC tournament, but Florida all year long has played down to bad competition and played up to great competition. They have taken Auburn to the wire. They've beaten Alabama twice. But at the same time, they went to overtime with Michigan. They lost to Vanderbilt. They've done that all year long. They've really, really fluctuated. And there are a bunch of metrics out there. I forget where I saw it, so I'm not gonna say the metric and everything. But there was a metric out there that actually did measure who plays better against good teams and worse against bad teams. And Florida was number one on that metric because that is just what they do. Everybody has said if they can get past their first round matchup, they're way more dangerous than most of the mid-tier seeds will be in their second round matchup. The one thing that gives me pause is that Marquette plays a really, really odd style. And with how much Oso Iguodaro has been basically running the system for Marquette recently, with Kolek and Iguodaro both playing, if you have to prepare for that team one day after you've played either Boise State or Colorado, which is already going to be tough to prepare for because you're going to have a shortened preparation period based on them being in the first four and you not knowing who you're going to play, it's just going to be tough for them to turn around and do that. But talent-wise, they are so much better. I mean, I said 2 weeks ago that I thought they were going to get a 5 or a 6 seed and I was going to put them into my Final Four immediately off the podcast. I'm so mad that they got this region because I now can't do that confidently.
All right, well, let's take a look at the Sweet 16 and beyond. What are your picks, region by region?
Well, I'll start with the East. I'm a little bit chalk overall, but I have UConn beating Auburn. I have Iowa State beating BYU, and then I have UConn beating Iowa State. The main reason I will say this is I do like to pick teams that I think have better chances to win the title, even in individual matchups. So I think that Auburn is a great team. I think that Auburn could be a title contender. I think that Iowa State could be a title contender. Well, I'll amend that statement. I think UConn obviously is the best team. And I think that they are a better profile as a title team than Iowa State, which is why I have to pick them in this individual game, even though technically overall I think Iowa State is definitely sound and could easily beat UConn. Then in the West, I have Arizona beating New Mexico. Could easily see that being Nevada as well. But actually, no, Nevada would have to beat Arizona first. But I do have an upset bracket where I do have Nevada and New Mexico, I will say that. But then I have North Carolina beating Alabama, and then Arizona beating UNC to make it to the Final Four, the 2 seed, the only 2 seed I picked. Then I have Houston beating Wisconsin in the South. Marquette beating Kentucky. Despite all that talk about all those teams that I think could beat Marquette, I did end up making the safe pick in the end. But that's mostly because I just don't think Kentucky can make it that far. So I had to pick a safer team to beat them. Then finally, I have Houston beating Marquette. And then in the Midwest, I have Purdue beating Gonzaga. Gonzaga's made 8 consecutive Sweet 16s. I don't see them falling short of that, other than if they were to just slip up in the first round. But fact of the matter is, after that, I don't see this team being a team that peaks anywhere beyond the Sweet 16. I think that's just ridiculous. And then I'll pick Creighton to beat Tennessee. Not a big Tennessee guy. And I'll have Creighton beating Purdue. I think Purdue has a respectable run, but I think Kalkbrenner is good enough to stop Edie, and the rest of the guard play on Creighton is way better than Purdue's. And then finally, in the Final Four, I have UConn beating Arizona, Houston beating Creighton, and UConn beating Houston.
Okay, and so you and I were driving in the car yesterday. You were driving, and I was doing a bracket, and I did my gut reaction bracket for our tournament challenge, and that's my Final Four. And that's what I had happening in the Final Four, and I had UConn beating Houston. So, great minds think alike.
And I will say, I originally
doing chalk.
Well, yeah, and I originally did have Purdue beating Creighton also, but I looked back and I was like, 3-1 seeds in this year. I know there. I just have a feeling that when you have three clear top three teams, there's no way that all three of them all make the Final Four. It just never happens. So I didn't feel like that'd be the right pick. There was, of course, that one year where there were 3-1 seeds in the Final Four, and it happened exactly like that. But I don't think this year is one of those years, because I think it's just a little bit too obvious. I think just all three of those teams are going to be playing with a little bit too much pressure that one of them will at least slip up.
Yeah, well, and people always like to go for upsets, but the statistics will tell you the upsets happen in the first and second round, and then pretty much after that, it's higher-seeded teams. And since the field got expanded to 64 in 1985, number one seeds have won 24 of the 38 championships. So odds are on your side if you pick a number one seed to win it all.
I also look back at last year's bracket, and I remembered that Creighton could have easily made the Final Four and was actually my Final Four pick, and I'm looking for them to redeem that this year. And I also think they have a chip on their shoulder because of the fact that that happened to them last year. And this year, pretty much have the exact same team, and I think they finally figured it out at the end
and
of the year.
Nobody's talking about them either.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about Tennessee because of Dalton Connect or whatever other reason anybody wants to come up with. So, I mean, I like Creighton because of that. I think more people are talking about them than you think about it, because people don't think Purdue is going to do anything, because people think Purdue's going to choke. But there are a lot of people picking Oregon to just beat Creighton and knock them out of that region early on. So, picking Oregon to beat Creighton early on. So, yeah, they are less talked about than I think they should be, even though KenPom profile-wise, they have the makeup of a champion.
Yes, they do. All right, well, that wraps up our preview of the 2024 men's NCAA tournament bracket. It's a mouthful. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 26th, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have another look at NBA action, review the opening week of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and preview the Major League Baseball season. That's right. Baseball starts this week, a couple games in Korea, and then the full season will be in full swing starting that next week. So we will start coverage of Major League Baseball. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his final NCAA basketball tournament predictive bracket. You can see how accurate he was. And his picks for next weekend's games that will be posted, as always, on Thursday. All of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4. THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.